Welcome to the AR Show, where I dive deep into augmented reality with a focus on the technology, the use cases, and the people behind them. I'm your host, Jason McDowell. Today's conversation is with Mark Greggett. Mark is the founder and CEO of NewEyes, an AR hardware and software company that originally launched in 2016 to assist those with degenerative eye conditions. Recently, the company has expanded its product offerings into enterprise, gaming, and entertainment with the launch of the Pro 3 and Pro 3e. Mark is a U.S. Navy veteran and an accomplished medical technology entrepreneur. Prior to NewEyes, Mark was the founder of Los Angeles Low Vision, which was recognized as a leader in the medical industry and became the number two distribution company for visual assistive technology in the country, responsible for millions in revenue. In this conversation, Mark describes how the company got its start by changing the lives of the visually impaired using custom software, glasses from the now defunct ODG, and the patient's ability to learn how to see again through the glasses.
Using neural adaptivity, changing contrast, magnification, bringing things closer to you, there's nothing that reverses this visual impairment, if you will. You know, taking somebody's usable vision and making their brain process faster and easier their world is really the kind of the secret sauce of the glasses. So using contrast, magnification, having the screens really close to your face, it was at that time, you know, something that was really changing these people's lives.
We go on to talk about the demise of AR glasses maker ODG and the resulting struggles and opportunities for Mark and the team at NewEyes. Now they are tackling healthcare, enterprise, and entertainment with a pair of new wearable displays. He also describes how he's built an AR hardware and software company on a shoestring budget and the challenges of raising money as a hardware tech company. As a reminder, you can find the show notes for this and other episodes at our website, thearshow.com. Let's dive in. Mark, how did you know this was the right path for you?
For augmented reality smart glasses, for our first path of medical devices, there's a lot of first paths that occurred simultaneously. I think for the low vision aspect of things, you know, sitting in somebody's room with technology, whether it's the outdated products I was selling or trying out our beta test products, the aha moment is when someone turns to you and says, I can see again, I can, you know, get back to a fulfilling life of whatever they wanted to do. But I think for myself, when I was out doing alpha prototypes for the glasses for the visually impaired and trying to figure out what worked, what didn't work, you know, what we could do and what we could achieve back in, you know, gosh, 2012, 2013, I can't believe I'm saying that. We partnered with a company called ODG with one of their previous prototype products for hardware. We came up with some very crude algorithms for software, and sitting in this woman's house that I'd known for, you know, it feels like forever. Her name was Shirley in Culver City, and sitting on the couch and her looking at her books and seeing, you know, our faces from 10, 20 feet away. You know, it's an amazing feeling. I think for me, the aha moment was when she was playing the piano and she said, glasses make bigger, right? Some of our patents around voice commands. And she turns to us, you know, on this video and says, you know, I feel so powerful. You know, and that was, that had to be the moment, right? The room really, the air got sucked out of the room. And we're sitting there going, this was something and this is something at that time we felt was going to be so much bigger than we ever really, really thought it would have been.
You really could change her life with the technology that you were creating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was instantaneous. It's not like, okay, we're going to do rehab for three, you know, you hurt your knee, you stub your toe, whatever it is. And you're doing rehab for 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever it may be. This was instantaneous. This was, I feel so powerful. I'm able to magnify into things with my voice and play the piano for the first time after 10 years. You know, to be able to do that and be able to give somebody that back is extremely humbling. And, you know, just as you know, being an entrepreneur, there's no amount of BS, there's no amount of paperwork, there's no amount of lawyers and legal fees and people trying to steal your ideas. You know, in most days, it's a pretty tough job. But to have those, you know, those videos come in, to have those people, you know, reach out to myself and the staff and articulate what we've done for them is extremely humbling. And that's, you know, that's why we've been doing it since 2013 and launched the company obviously in 2016. And now I can't believe it's 2020. And we're moving into so many other things, and that's really why we do it. That's what keeps us going. It's just the being humble and grateful and practicing gratitude for where we're at and what we're doing.
I think that you've picked a special focus for the sort of augmented reality technology that allows you to get that sort of instant feedback, that instant superpower that you're delivering to your users, which is really amazing. How did you find your way here? What was it you were doing prior to the founding of New Eyes that led you to ultimately create the company?
It started originally, I was actually in real estate and investments, hated my life, was super, super miserable. You know, lots of backstabbing, which, you know, obviously occurs now in the AR field. But prior to that, you know, it was a lot of backstabbing and investors wanting to make more money and more money and more money. I mean, there was no real kind of end in sight of where this was going. And at the time, my wife said, you know, Mark, go do anything. It's Sunday night. You're miserable. You're just, you know, we've got two small daughters. I want you to be happy with what you're doing. And she said, go pump gas, go to Starbucks. It doesn't matter. Just find something that you love. I mean, a buddy of mine at the time was working for a company that was selling these kind of assistive technology devices. Think of the old school microfiche machine. So you have a big screen in front of you, a little camera underneath and a tray table, and you can do, you know, certain mundane things. You know, it sits in the corner, it's 60 pounds, you know, read a book, look at a letter, things like that. And at the time, he said, you know, take a look at it. Tell me what you think. And I thought, and I didn't know, obviously, you know, why doesn't someone wear a pair of glasses? Why can't someone have just a regular magnifier? You know, these dumb thoughts that people that don't know this industry, you know, have all the time. He said, listen, I'll take you out to lunch, you know, see what we're doing. Tell me what you think. You know, it was the complete, you know, opposite. It's 180 degrees of what I was doing. We're in these people's houses and we're changing their lives. You know, they're so excited to see us. They're so excited for us to change their lives. And it was really a means to make a really, really good income and really do something good for humanity, do something good for this patient base that for the most part is forgotten, right? I mean, if you lose an arm, you lose a leg, it's a visual, you know, impairment. Okay, oh my gosh, you know, he lost his arm in the war. But people that have macular degeneration, glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, all these visual impairments, they're just walking down the street. I mean, there's millions upon millions upon millions of people, and you just wouldn't know unless they said, hey, Jason, by the way, I can't see your face. You know, so it was this passion that I got that really propelled me into where I am now.
At that point, you were selling other sorts of assistive technologies that enabled people with low vision to have more access to the things that they love in their life, whether primarily the example you gave was to read a book or something under some sort of superpowered magnifier for that sort of purpose. What were some of the other technologies that you were selling at that time? And why did you feel that they didn't quite get all the way there with what you are ultimately trying to do here with New Eyes?
You can hear something, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 times and then go, there may be something to this. So my business model was different. So instead of, you know, doctors selling devices in their office, you know, ophthalmologists, optometrists, they're seeing hundreds of patients a day. You know, you're another rep or drug rep coming in saying, why don't you push my product? It didn't make sense to me. So for me, my business model was different where I said, you know, hey, doctor, why don't you send your patient to me? Myself, my staff will go out to their house free of charge and see what we can do. So getting all of this just, you know, analytics, getting all this data of people, thousands and thousands and thousands of people saying, Mark, why can't someone come up with a pair of glasses that does the same thing? I just, you know, it's kind of, you know, human nature, like, oh, I'm just going to put glasses on and that's going to correct my vision. At the time, there really wasn't anything there. And some of the early products were $20,000+, no reimbursement, stuff that just didn't really make a lot of sense for the normal Joe Blow consumer. So that's really the path that I went down, sitting in, and I shoot, probably sitting in 5,000 people's houses saying, Mark, why can't you come up with a pair of glasses? Mark, why can't you come up with a pair of glasses? Finally, you know, getting the blessing from my wife to say, you know, in 2013, you know, hey, I think I want to try to do this. I think I want to go down this path. You know, I want to spend our life savings to see if this is something that's viable, and got the blessing, thank goodness. And, you know, another funny story. I had reached out to Epson at the time, the BT200 series, Mike Leva and Eric and Anna. And one of them responded and said, you know, hey, come on down. I'm cold emailing them. Just nervous, my hands just, oh my gosh, they're going to think I'm an idiot. This is terrible. And I emailed them and said, you know, hey, I'd love to come down and show you what we're doing. I think low vision would be a phenomenal use case for the visually impaired. And Mike responded and said, yeah, come on down. I was like, oh man, this is too much. This is Epson America, right? So I'm sitting in my work van with all the big CCTVs in the back and just sweating and just like, they're not going to believe me. This is terrible. And it was really another story where it propelled me to keep going down this path where they said, we believe in you. This is great. This is amazing. We'd love to work with you. Unfortunately, at the time, obviously, as we all know, the BT200 series, you know, the camera was just not good enough. The Intel processor wasn't good enough. But it was another stepping stone in that direction that pushed us down the path to really finding that first hardware manufacturer, which obviously was ODG at the time in 2015.
You said 2015 is when you ultimately partnered with ODG?
Yeah. So mid to late 2015, reached out to ODG. They also said, you know, this is a great use case. This is something we'd love to talk. Flew up to San Francisco at the time. They were off of Townsend and sat in Ralph's office and talked with him for a few hours about what my vision is, pun intended, what my thoughts and visions were of how augmented reality smart glasses, so how AR could really change the landscape of how patients see again that are visually impaired.
What set the ODG, I guess, solution apart from what Epson was doing at that time? Was it just primarily about the camera?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really about visualization. So, you know, at the time, their camera was a 4-megapixel camera, but it was, the latency was almost not noticeable, right? You know, you have a product that sits on your face. Again, it's a little bit heavier, unfortunately, but at that time, that was the technology, right? With the Qualcomm processors, which have gotten phenomenally better, that was the latest and greatest of technology. So the tech that they were using in there, the form factor, the ergonomics of the product were the ultimate decisions, were most of the decisions. And then partnering with ODG in terms of who they were as a company, the people that were there, the smart people that were there, the people that really became family quickly for me, made those decisions very easy to move forward with them. In order to really kind of launch, if you will, or propel New Eyes to be a corporation, a company, something that I wanted to do in, you know, 2016 and beyond.
And what were you creating on top of it? I imagine you're not just reselling the ODG glasses to your client base, but you'd mentioned that there's some proprietariness around the voice commands and some other elements. What sort of software or services do you provide on top of those glasses?
Yeah, full disclosure, I have to say that my IP attorney is way smarter than me and made me look way smarter. So one of our kind of first thoughts in previous prototypes that we were using were someone was using, they were taking a magazine, a book, you know, a newspaper and sitting there and reading it and trying to magnify with their fingers and do all the stuff. You know, if they had neuropathy, you know, they're shaking, they can't feel the paper, things like that. You know, my thought process was why can't you just use your voice to make things bigger and smaller? It seems kind of like you could. And our team at the time, you know, our software team that was out of India, who are obviously family now at this point as well, they said, you know, let's do voice commands. Let's see if this works. With a lot of our patents, it was around voice commands of magnification, contrast overlay. So basically what happens is using neural adaptivity, changing contrast, magnification, bringing things closer to you, there's nothing that reverses this visual impairment, if you will. You know, taking somebody's usable vision and making their brain process faster and easier their world, it's really the kind of the secret sauce of the glasses. So using contrast, magnification, having the screens really close to your face, it was at that time, you know, something that was really changing these people's lives. So taking their hardware and taking our proprietary and patented software at the time, as well as our patented optical. So with cameras, as you know, obviously you can magnify to a certain distance, and then obviously the pixels start to get less and less and less, and it gets blurrier basically, or more blurry. So using our telephoto lenses, now you could see out to about 400 feet, and people were at, you know, Colorado's Rockies games, watching baseball players. So all those things that you and I just take granted for, you know, oh, I'm going to the Angels game, it's fine. That stuff was not, they people were writing that off that they could never do it again. Hmm. So using the glasses, they were actually able to rekindle a lot of the stuff that they loved. It wasn't about reading a 300-page book. It was about just living your life and as you did before.
Yeah. Unfortunately, ODG didn't survive through whatever was happening in the industry at that time.
Yeah.
What's your take? What went wrong there?
Yeah, no, I don't want to get in trouble. I'm having lunch with Paul on Saturday, so I'm going to get in trouble here. No, I mean, I think, you know, the people that worked at ODG, the very basics of shipping and packing to, you know, software programming, hardware programming, doing all these things to put this amazing product together, they by far, and I still say this today, they are the most smartest people I've ever met. You know, the most, you know, hardworking, smartest guys that really put their heart and soul and believed in what Ralph was saying and believed in the mission. And I think at the end of the day, the upper management really just didn't see the forward-facing vision, right? Perfect example is us, New Eyes, as a company buying a lot of their product. They didn't treat us so well, you know, at least from the upper management standpoint. It was, you know, we're ODG, who the F are you? You know, that wasn't the thought process. That wasn't the mentality of the everyday workers that were coming in there and building these products and changing the world, in my mind, for the better. But upper management just had this corrosive attitude that really, at the end of the day, just, you know, it eroded the company, unfortunately, at least in my humble opinion.
We'll leave it at that.
Yes.
So what did you do as a company? You know, they were your primary hardware supplier at that point. How did you respond when those ODG products were no longer available?
You know, I think it was an extremely sad day for myself, an extremely troubling day, you know, being so emotionally involved with ODG. Again, I was traveling up there every week, you know, working with them, giving them ideas, giving them feedback from the field, if you will. It was a hard life lesson to realize that you can't have your eggs all in one basket, right? I mean, that's just, you know, I'm sure your parents told you that. I've been told that, and you just go, oh my gosh, like, man, like, why did we do that? So with that in mind, you know, unfortunately, there was a lot of asset sales through that from ODG for their hardware. We were able to obtain hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of their products and inventory. So we were able to keep going as we were looking for our next manufacturer, looking for our next product that we could embed our software in, some of our hardware. Luckily enough, with Pico Interactive, we didn't have to embed our hardware. So it was really just mainly software. So finding that next manufacturer, having people reach out to us. Again, we had really kind of put low vision and assistive technology and AR smart glasses on the map. So a lot of manufacturers were reaching out to us. And at the time, we were great with ODG. We didn't need to go anywhere else. And so I think the next iteration of our product line really came down to who we felt was going to be the most supportive of us and our vision moving forward. I had reached out to... I reached out to Will Winston over at Pico, flew down to Orange County, California, met him, and instantly just a super, super awesome guy, really easy to deal with. And it was, again, another opposites of working with upper management at ODG, where it was really easy to talk with him and work with him. And that really is still today. I mean, we still, you know, move a lot of their product with our software. I like their products a lot just because of the wide field of view for low vision. And I think that even though it's a little bit more bulky, it really is a Lamborghini when it comes to how it's helping people, you know, see again.
Pico, though, is really focused on VR, right? Although maybe some video pass-through, I guess, would be necessarily part of the VR rig that they're creating to be useful with what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we looked at, you know, after the ODG incident, if you will, you know, we looked at what was the next iteration of what we wanted to do software-wise and product-wise. You know, unfortunately, the World War One, you know, Korea, you know, the older generation was unfortunately passing on. And we were looking at, one, we need to fill the product, you know, product void or hardware void. And two, what's the next iteration of patient population? Like, who are we gonna be addressing? Like, reading a 300-page book, that's not really, you know, why are you doing that? Most people aren't doing that. They're listening to books on tape. You know, at the time, Amazon's blowing up. You know, they had blown up for books on tape, things like that. And for digital, you know, me going into retina specialists and being friends with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of doctors, you know, it was less about reading books and more about the digital age. So how do you combine the digital age with someone just wanting to see a loved one's face again. You know, it's an interesting concept. It's an interesting way to look at it. And, you know, with Will coming in and originally looking at the Pico device going, oh, cool, this is great, wide field of view, camera really works well, this is going to be great, you know, and by happenstance, again, most of this is by accident. Anybody says that they planned it and it goes out the door just like you planned is lying or out of business. You know, pushing one button on the Pico device, you're immersed in this, you know, immersive digital reality to where, you know, someone that has late stage macular degeneration that just wants to get on Facebook and see their grandkids, someone that wants to go and just read the New York Times or Washington Post or anything like that, that's really what they were wanting to do. You know, I just want to watch TV. How many times, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, you know, I just want to watch TV again. You know, perfect example, partnering with Comcast for Xfinity Stream on the glasses where you're watching your normal TV in IMAX theater experience. So looking at it, we were able to, knock on wood, be able to combine a head-worn magnifier where you're magnifying, you're doing all those things that we were doing with ODG product. Now you have, with one click of a button, this immersive experience where you're in this inclusive digital ecosystem, you know, for telemedicine, for watching TV, for social media, for reading, for all these things that these people wanted to do. That's where we felt the next iteration of products should have gone and was going to go. And luckily enough, it did go. So with, you know, with Pico, we've launched two products with them. Second product was specifically made, you know, we worked with them in conjunction to find what was going to be best. 4K screen, 16 megapixel camera, testing it out before anybody knew about it, giving our input. And that product today, I mean, is a phenomenal product. It's something that I love, something I use, you know, and it is something that at the time was really, really, and still today is selling extremely well.
Which version of the Pico product is that?
For low vision, it's the E2 Plus. For the non-low vision, it's, I think they call it the G2 4K Enterprise.
Got it. And so you move from a great partnership, although maybe not as warm and fuzzy as you wanted all the time, but a good partnership with ODG, into this now, this new partnership with Pico. How do you think about the next evolution of what you're creating? What was kind of the thinking process there?
The next evolution of what we wanted to do is we've been doing very well in low vision. We've been doing very well in the medical space. And looking at it, and just as you know, you're going through multiple rounds of funding. People are asking, okay, low vision, that's great. I don't understand it. You know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And you're getting all these crazy different ideas from different people and different, you know, influencers, different people that, you know, they matter because of certain things that they do. You know, for us, New Eyes was always going to be bigger than low vision. You know, my thought process was always low vision is such my passion, you know, and I've pitched to investors where I find myself walking away from it. You know, one, they don't really care about it, but I find myself re-energized about low vision. But that would never was going to be, we weren't going to be a one-trick pony, good, bad, or indifferent. So for me, looking at it at the long-term strategy, we always wanted to get into the enterprise market. We always wanted to get in the consumer market and gaming market and entertainment market. But how do you do it, right? Like this is a really tall feat for a company that's raised, you know, $2 million. Like it feels almost impossible, and it still almost feels impossible. Luckily enough, things are going really well. So for us, looking at the next iteration of what glasses, in my humble opinion, and a lot of people luckily have agreed with me, what's the next iteration of smart glasses or AR smart glasses that should come out? And what does that look like? What's the technology behind that? How does this integrate into our daily lives? And luckily enough, again, you know, lots of companies reach out to us and say, hey, here's a prototype. Here's a dev kit. What do you think? What do you like? What do you don't like? One company in particular sent a dev kit to us. And just as it was with Will, I really connected with them in a positive, you know, personal way with their technology. In looking at it saying, you know, I like this, I don't like this. You know, if we're going to do something next, I don't want to do something that's just off the shelf. Like, I'm not going to take it off the shelf and just say, okay, cool, it's just part of software. I want to change the landscape even further. And to that point, holy crap, would I want to do this again? Probably not. But you know, neither here nor there. We're here, right? We're on the precipice this week of launching the Pro 3. We launched the Pro 3e. You know, so these reference design originally that I got from this manufacturer, I said, you know, this is what I want. This is the design. This is the look. These are the displays. This is what I want. And this is where I think that we should go. You know, having a pair of AR smart glasses that truly is a plug and play into your smart device, whether it's your, you know, Android phone, whether it's your iPhone, whether it's your tablet, you know, whether it's your desktop, if you will, any smart device that you have, to really truly plug that Type-C plug into it and just start up right away, was really where I knew I wanted to go. I wanted to have something where you've got these 1080p displays, these 4K displays. It's something that's lightweight, that sits on your glass, the ergonomics. I always joke, one of my good friends, he's from South Africa, we call him the Viking, right? He's this massive dude with this massive head. And I put the Pro 3 on, I was like, that's the stress test right there. Like, if Rich can wear those, like, we're good to go. Anybody, it'll fit anybody's head. So having this product sit on somebody's face where you can just plug it into your phone, display comes up right away. There's no extra software. There's no, you know, extra stuff you have to do or download. That's where I wanted to go. And, you know, luckily we've been able to achieve that. Definitely a lot more gray hairs I have because of that. But, you know, we're finally launching. It's been a very, very tough challenge, but we're here and we're moving forward.
Let's explore this from a couple different angles here. One, on the challenge side, you received this reference design, but you thought, mm-hmm. well, we need to make it our vision. Mm-hmm. Can you share who that reference design came from?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, luckily enough, it became public. You know, and I share it with you, and we haven't shared it publicly before, but they just shared it. So I'm happy to disclose it. And the only reason that we haven't talked about it prior to was because every time we announced our partnership with a manufacturer, our competition would call them within like maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And it happened with ODG, it happened with Pico. And luckily enough, thank goodness we have an exclusive multi-year contract with this manufacturer. So we have things in writing now, which is great. So yeah, so we partnered with and we took that reference design and turned that into the Pro 3. We took the controller away. We took the low 2-megapixel camera, which doesn't be, why would you use that? The low 2-megapixel camera away and put our own megapixel camera in there. We took it and took the controller away. Came up with a Type-C plug, and now you can plug this into your phone with the proprietary PCB boards and a proprietary design with our multi-year exclusive with them. And then we're just happy to be where we're at. They were a startup. We were kind of a pseudo startup, and we've moved together in order to come up with something that's very unique and extremely different.
What were some of the biggest challenges in bringing that product from that initial reference design to market?
Oh, plug and play. I mean, it's, you know, you're dealing with a cell phone, you know, and as you know, from a technical standpoint, dealing with a cell phone is one of the most hostile environments on the planet. You know, you've got, you know, grandma in Iowa, who's got 25 different apps up at one time and doesn't know how to close them out, to someone that's wearing, you know, you're using it to debug and they're using their own custom software. So having all of these hostile, you know, these uncontrollable situations, if you will, I guess less hostile, but more uncontrollable situations, to be able to plug the glasses in and work right away without, you know, being messed with operating systems and updating this or apps in there, was really the biggest challenge, and really was the biggest challenge until, you know, shoot, just recently.
Were there specific special techniques that you did to overcome all of that, the challenges of that environment, the hostility of that environment?
Yeah, I mean, it really was. I mean, you know, from the firmware guys to the software guys to the camera guys, really. I mean, okay, you've got a camera working on the forward-facing glasses. You know, what if Facebook starts up? What if, you know, all these other things? So having the firmware guys, the operating system guys, to having the PCB, the hardware guys, come up and really work together. You know, everybody's, there's four different time zones we're working in. So my days start at 1 a.m. I'm up at 3 a.m. I'm up at 6 a.m. taking a break for a couple hours. And then now we're in U.S. time and I'm working with the team here locally. It was, you know, sure it will always be, but it was definitely a challenge to bring this product to market, you know, the way we did. And I think even if we had $100 million or $2 million or $1, the problem still would have existed, right? It may have just been less painful with investors.
And were there any challenges on the supply chain side of things?
That was something that was an aha moment for me. So, you know, we're living in these COVID times, I guess, if you will, where there's just supply chain issues from semiconductors to circuit boards to all of these to electronic parts because people were shut down for a year not manufacturing things. So by happenstance, we obviously with our designs wanted to plug into phones, and obviously we have a great partnership with Samsung, so we're plugging into a lot of their devices and their phones. Yeah, you know, there's only one Samsung, right? There's only, you know, one Google. There's only, you know, these massive companies. For us, if we were going to go out and source circuit boards, if we were going to go out and source Qualcomm chips and stuff like that, I'd be asking you for a job. You know, it wouldn't be there because there's a massive shortage of circuit boards. So being able to plug into a phone where Samsung has the buying power that Nuwise doesn't, or most anybody doesn't, was by design for us, but by accident. So supply chain issues now actually don't exist here, knock on wood, for right now.
Because you don't have to build a separate compute pack, you don't have to build a separate device to drive the glasses. Yep. It's really meant to be a connected display.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, yeah, it's you know, we always joke, you've got your speakers, you've got your microphone, you've got your 4K displays, you've got your forward-facing camera and the PCB board, of course, and two massive heat sinks. So I'm a proponent of thermal and making sure it doesn't heat up on your face, obviously. You know, but that was really it, you know, plugging it into, you know, having your iPhone drive it, having your Samsung S20, S21, S10 drive it, was what we wanted to do moving forward with the future. And luckily enough, you know, without a computing pack, we, you know, like you said, with a computing pack, we would have been dead in the water. But now we've got a great product and supply chain, knock on wood, is not an issue. You know, maybe tomorrow, who knows?
Part of the focus is still the same low vision population. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, looking at the product from a phone standpoint, you know, the phones do a phenomenal job, and I'll you know, harsh on Samsung. I think Samsung does one of the best jobs out there. You know, they have accessibility features that I've never seen before. They have AI components, Bixby Vision, where object recognition, you know, facial recognition, you know, color recognition. These are all built-in features to the phone that are just added features that can be displayed in the glasses and obviously using the forward-facing camera. So all of these accessibility features that Samsung has really just drives the technology meter forward for the visually impaired and accessibility to have all these tools available for them. You know, again, on the phone, you've got these small buttons and things like that. Now you've got this beautiful 4K display with, you know, in 2500 nits, really bright display that you can see all these accessibility features on your glasses. And then, you know, furthermore, Google with their voice access, you know, using your voice to navigate your phone, swipe right, swipe left, open Facebook, close Facebook, all these just, you know, really kind of easy tools to use on your phone now are available on your face, really.
So really, it is just an extension of the smartphone. Like this is the way to think about it, as a wearable display extension to your smartphone.
Absolutely.
And so you're able to take advantage of all of these for the existing low vision customers. And you'd mentioned this ambition, though, that goes beyond the initial starting population of low vision users to include enterprise, I imagine, and entertainment.
Yes. Yep. Enterprise, gaming, entertainment. Yeah. So when I looked at, you know, where we wanted to go in 2020, as we all kind of, you know, had to retard our thought processes and our endeavors, even though we were still able to move forward technology-wise, as a crazy CEO with my hair on fire all the time, you know, it was looking at how do we enter into the enterprise market? How do we strategically do that? And most importantly, how do we execute on it? And how do we execute successfully on it? You know, and that really started with some key hires, as you've seen, you know, board of advisors, you know, bringing on Fraser Bowie, who's a superhuman, you know, bringing on Trevor Backlund, who's a superhuman, who's you know, knee deep in enterprise and has this Rolodex that I've never seen in my life. These strategic hires coming on and saying, this is my vision. You know, Jason, this is my vision. What do you think? Do you want to be a part of this? You know, at New Eyes, we're very different than most companies. You know, it's a collective. You know, okay, cool. My title CEO. I don't give a shit. Like it doesn't mean anything to me. It's a collective of us all putting our heads together as a family to execute on what we all believe is a common goal and common vision of changing the world. It just so happens with Fraser and Trevor coming on board, the enterprise division, the enterprise has taken off significantly to something I couldn't even, you know, you talked to me 6 months ago or a year ago, I would be like, dude, I don't know, you know, you want to partner with most of the Fortune 100 companies? Sure, that sounds great. With bringing on key hires, strategic hires, they've made, you know, my crazy ideas and my thought process, you know, my minuscule thought process really reality. So, you know, step-by-step directions, data visualization for engineering, step-by-step directions, remote assistance, all these things that are out there. How do you do that? Okay, we've got a proprietary controller. Okay, now we have to get this, you know, checked into IT. We're going to do a 6-month pilot study, things like that. Again, having, you know, a phone that's been approved by IT with most of these Fortune 100 companies, they agree with us. They agree that this is the next iteration of smart glass technology. And it's been great. You know, you'll see, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, you'll see some major, major companies, one automotive company that's going to be using the glasses for, you know, engineering visualization. So it's been humbling again to be able to change the world differently as we do with low vision and medical. We're able to do it in enterprise. Yeah. And furthermore, you know, giving the engineering team, you know, hey, it'd be great to play games, you know. I play probably more video games than I should, but that's fine. I won't tell anybody that. So being able to come up with a lightweight pair of glasses, taking the forward-facing camera off of it and having this really just immersive experience for mobile gaming, for, you know, Google Stadia, Microsoft, Sony PlayStation, all these things where you have this immersive experience on a pair of glasses that look like a pair of glasses, was something that I thought of. And I honestly wanted to do it next year. That was a 2022 directive. Thought it was going to be something that would be cool. And all of a sudden we just landed smack dab in a product that's, you know, being sold today. It's a manufacturing product. And people are very, very happy with it. So again, humble to change the entertainment and gaming space in that way as well.
So on the low vision and the enterprise both leverage the camera.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of the gaming, the intention has been to remove the camera.
You are correct.
And really just focus on the display.
Yeah, get something on your face that looks like a pair of glasses. You can't really tell what's on your face other than, oh, that's a pretty cool pair of glasses. But you got this, you know, 148-inch screen or 42-degree field of view, if you will, sitting on there that's lightweight. You have the diopter adjusters. You have something where it's just a little wire coming down to your phone or tablet, if you will, and be able to play games in this really immersive experience where it's super lightweight. I mean, it looks like a pair of glasses is something that I wanted to do. And, you know, again, that got fast forwarded quite quickly to launching last month.
Wow. And what's the overall weight of the system?
Yeah, so it's about 68 grams.
68. That's very impressive.
Yeah, no heat on your face. And I mean, ultra thin, you know, displays and ultra thin glasses that you put on your face and get to go and, you know, play PUBG or Call of Duty that I play more than anything.
And you'd mentioned 2,500 nits. Is that off the display or is that to the eyes?
That's off the display. So yeah, obviously you'll get a little less, obviously, but 2,500 nits off the obviously the OLED displays.
And what's the combiner optic technology you're using here? It seems to be two major camps that companies have been pursuing generally. One is the waveguide, mostly diffractive waveguide, and the other is the birdbath sort of design that ODG popularized several years back.
Yeah. I mean, and I think wave, you know, let's be honest, I think waveguides are definitely the wave of the future. I think that they're doing a lot of great things. But again, I mean, you, when you look at this, you know, if you want to manufacture 5, 10 units, 20 units, you know, a couple hundred units, waveguides are great. But when you want to do a mass deployment like we do with these Fortune 100 companies, when they want to buy thousands upon thousands of units, you have to look at your supply chain and go, what is readily available? And obviously Birdbath is something that you can produce overnight in the tens of thousands without blinking an eye. So, you know, will we use waveguides in the future? I'm sure we will. But until the supply chain issues get worked out, it's going to be a no-go for us.
How do you compare what you're doing to what Enreal is doing?
I would never say anything negative about a company, but we're not a YouTube video. I mean, it's simply put, what we're doing is real. We're not putting out, you know, these videos where we're putting animation in front of you that's not real. You know, Fraser's done a great job with step-by-step direction. He's done a great job with voice commands in showing the glasses, the gaming glasses. Everything we put out there is real. There's been rumors and issues with Enreal in terms of, you know, is it connecting to a phone? Is it not? Do you have to download software? Does it work? Yeah, we're focused on the U.S. That's been our major focus right now. That is our major focus for the Pro 3 and the Pro 3e. We're seeing you know, upcoming and great things in Germany and UK and in other areas as well. But we just haven't seen what they're doing to be real, unfortunately. I guess pun intended.
And real?
Yes.
Is real?
Is it? I don't know. Great YouTube videos, though.
they are shipping product, though, in Asia and in Europe.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is it with a controller or is it with a phone? I don't know. And I'm not sure if anybody does.
Are you partnering with telcos in order to help bring your product, especially to the gaming sort of market or on the enterprise side?
Yeah, no, I mean, we've had some great conversations with some major telcos. I don't think that we want to go down the path of Enreal of major partnerships and being locked into one telco. I think the conversations that we've had have been interesting, right? We've had, you know, probably four or five good conversations with telcos. We have two-ish, maybe more that are under NDA and that are wanting to partner with us. And the funny thing is, you know, enterprise is a great, great story. It's a great product. Gaming is a great product. It's a great story. Guess where they go to?
Where?
Low vision.
The telcos are gravitating to low vision.
Yeah, it is. It is the, I mean, it's a great, you know, again, it's a great conversation. It's an odd conversation, but it's a great conversation going, we really like accessibility. We really think that we want to get involved with accessibility. We haven't really understood it. We're not sure where to go. You guys have obviously become and been the expert, me personally, since 2010. You know, we'd like to move into that visually impaired low vision space. We'd like to address that. Love enterprise, want to do it. We'll totally put the gaming glasses in our stores. Sounds great. We love 5G. You guys are 5G. You're one of the only companies that are 5G compatible. Love that story. But tell me more about low vision. It's been great. You know, I think I go back to my conversations with Tom Ladowski, who's head of accessibility at Comcast. You know, that partnership was a long partnership to get inked, but it was a partnership that did get inked with him. And his vision is really taking accessibility and putting it into everyday life. You know, why do we have to have an accessibility app when it just should be part of our ecosystem? And him and I have shared that vision for years and years. And I think now, you know, Comcast has led the way. You know, Xfinity team has led the way. I think now more than ever, some of the big telcos, a lot of the Fortune 100s are now taking that adoption seriously and having that conversation that we, you know, in all honesty, we should have had a long time ago.
You'd mentioned that you've raised $2 million.
Yes.
Which for a hardware technology company, which granted you're not manufacturing the hardware,
yeah,
but you are pushing the boundaries with what you've done with ODG, and now you've done the Pico work, and now you're working with a new partner, bringing to market a product that didn't yet exist. Mm-hmm. How the heck do you pull that off on such a small shoestring budget?
I don't know. I was going to ask you. No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, I think the end of the day, you know, yes, we've raised, you know, next to nothing. I mean, $2 million is $2 million, and I'm exceptionally grateful to some of our, you know, really friends and family, some early angels that believed in what we were doing. But really what we've done is, you know, January 1, 2016, we launched the company. We get a bunch of CES startup awards featuring all these articles. That's great. But how do you stay alive as a company? Is anybody will tell you, you know, sales cures all. Revenue cures all. We started shipping in April of 2016. We started making money in April of 2016. You know, for us, we've generated millions and millions of dollars in revenue every year. We've sold thousands upon thousands upon thousands of units. We've done things that, you know, companies that have raised $3 billion haven't done, right? So for us, even though it's been a low amount of money, we've stayed lean, we've stayed mean, as I say, as we all joke on our Tuesday calls, we're still top ramen. So we're still, you know, fighting it out, but sales cures all. I mean, we've done quite well. We've done very well in regards to other companies and sales and really driving that message home, you know, partnering with the VA, partnering with insurance companies like United Healthcare and AT&T, driving those sales have kept us alive and really spending almost every dollar, maybe all every dollar on R&D and development and keeping these engineers employed is where we've been the most successful with the least amount of money.
Yeah, very impressive. So last year, 2020, was for a lot of software companies, a lot of companies in the space, was really a great year because, you know, for example, medical, maybe they were a little bit resistant to change, and all of a sudden, sort of the environment and manufacturing, some of these use cases, suddenly there was an imperative to change. These companies recognized that they had to be able to work more effectively without being elbow to elbow with each other.
Yep.
How was 2020 for you?
Yeah, it was pretty rough. it was definitely the baseball bat to the face for sure. So for us for 2020, you know, we were successful. We stayed alive. We generated revenue. You know, we stayed lean and mean as we do today. You know, 2020 for us, our business model, which really our first and most profitable vertical at the time, was low vision, of course. So perfect examples. Jason's grandmother has, you know, been diagnosed with macular degeneration. She's in an elder care facility. We have a rep in LA or Ohio or San Francisco or wherever that would go out and work with Jason's mom with our glasses in their retirement facility. 2020, as you know, everything was locked down. So I definitely want to, you know, say that our head of operations, she was head of sales, now she's our head of operations, Regina Chapman, was the shining light to keep us alive in 2020. Moving from a B2B model to a hybrid B2C model, where we were still generating, you know, significant revenue, but we had to shift completely to this B2C model. So now Jason's grandmother is getting the device shipped to her. Now we're doing over-the-phone calls. Luckily enough, we came out with a telemedicine platform called NewCall, where we could talk to Jason's grandmother in the actual glasses, which is pretty darn cool, and say, okay, try this, do this, work with the product this way. And we were successful. Things went, you know, really, really well. Again, having to be able to pivot and move in different directions quickly, even though I call us kind of a pseudo startup, we're still, you know, a lean and mean team of, you know, four or five people here, plus engineers, which aren't obviously part of the sales staff. But having the marketing team and sales team move quickly and deviate and be able to execute correctly and monetize that execution, that's really been our strengths. I mean, it's been our strengths since day one because we've raised such little money. And for Regina to do that quickly and be successful at it in 2020, my hat's off to her, and super happy to be here and super happy to be moving in so many different directions as we are in 2021 and beyond.
So 2021 is looking up compared to 2020.
Significantly. Yeah. I mean, it's still a pain, right? You're launching new products, you're coming up with new concepts, you're hiring people, we're in a fundraise, which is, you know, a fundraise. So there's a lot of things going on. There's bigger problems in 2021 and bigger goals and loftier goals, but we've been achieving them. We're a little bit late, but we're achieving them and launching within, you know, expectations, I guess, if you will.
What's been the challenge for raising money as a hardware company? What's especially difficult about it?
One, everybody loves software. You know, hardware is this kind of faux pas, you know, don't do it, you know, please don't pitch me on hardware. I think for me personally, and this is just me speaking, you know, frankly, I think that there was a company out there that raised a lot of money for hardware, and everybody thought it was going to be the biggest thing and the best thing and the, you know, the end all be all.
You couldn't be referring to Magic Leap, could you?
I neither can confirm nor deny that. Last thing I need is another lawsuit, right? So, you know, there was a company out there that raised a lot of money that a lot of people thought was going to be huge. And they didn't know how to execute. They had the wrong goals in mind, in my humble opinion. And when we're pitching today, people ask me, what's the difference between you and them? And I go through the whole diatribe of, now we've got partnerships with, you know, company A that's a billion-dollar company, company B that's a billion-dollar company. We have teaming agreements. We have pilot studies going on. This company is about to order 1,000 units. Because of the other company raising so much money and so much fluff and so much YouTube videos, that's really put us in a very precarious position where people just don't want to touch it. And that's fine. You know, we'll sell our way out of it, as we always have. Luckily enough, we have a few investors that we think, you know, may come through. Who knows until the check's clear, right? But I think we're off to good things. And at the end of the day, we're sales oriented and we're experts in executing with little to no money.
That is an amazing skill set for an entrepreneur.
I don't know if it's good or bad. Yeah, if you would have told me the path we were going down now in 2021, and the panic attacks, the sleepless nights, the craziness, the everything that we've endured right to this day, I don't know if I would do it again. Honestly, it's been challenging.
But you survived so far.
Yeah. I mean, we survived so far. I love we're doing what we love. Raising money is not what I love, but the business itself, I am so humbly grateful to be surrounded by way smarter people than me.
Where do you take it from here? What's the kind of broader vision given what you've accomplished already?
God willing, we raise money and we move forward. I mean, I would like to, and I know how, and I know why, and I know what to do to build a better pair of consumer glasses. I think the low vision will always be at my heart. It will always be at the heart of New Eyes as a company itself. But building a pair of consumer glasses, again, going back to my conversations with Tom Ladowski, building a pair of consumer glasses that encompass those accessibility technologies and those accessibility features to where if you're visually impaired, you put them on. If you're an enterprise customer, you put them on. If you're someone that just wants to game, if you're someone that just wants to watch entertainment, do all these other things, having the one-stop shop of glasses, if we had enough money, I absolutely today know how to build them.
Can you share what's missing from what you've already done?
Heck no. Oh. Well, yeah, your technology.
That's the right answer. That's the right answer.
Yeah, no, of course, dude.
So as you look out over the next 12, 18 months, you know, you survived 2020, 2021 is picking up. You got this new product that you've launched, the entertainment version, I guess you've launched recently, and you're just coming out now with the other version with the camera-based solution as well. Mm-hmm. What concerns you now? Like who or what in this industry is making you nervous?
You know, I think I would have to say, you know, I pride myself and I have these conversations, and I also screw this up too, by the way. I pride myself to have blinders on. You know, I talk to my team about having blinders on and not believing the hype, not believing the YouTube video. You know, concentrating on our strengths and concentrating on what we know we can do in the near term and future and beyond, that's the most important thing. You know, there's going to be another competitor out there. There's going to be another YouTube video. There's going to be another influencer talking about the next best thing. Cool. That doesn't affect us. You know, for us, staying true to our visions and knowing the technology that's coming out and knowing the supply chains and being able to execute on that, that's the most important thing. You know, there's going to be other companies. So am I worried about other companies coming out and their technology? I know it sounds arrogant, but you know, it's inevitable, right? It's going to happen. So staying true to what we're doing is our main focus and my main focus really.
So as you kind of think back, you in some ways have been working on this for a decade, but the company's been officially around for 5 years or so.
Yep.
How has your perspective about the industry changed? Maybe about where we are, where we're going, what it'll take to get there? How has that changed?
You know, when ODG was around and seeing some of their prototypes, the R9, the R8, the R whatever, I felt that the technology was so far ahead and it was just going to be an amazing time. And I didn't have to worry about, you know, hardware. I could concentrate on software. This is where the technology is. This is where this industry is going. You know, with ODG going out of business, with investors in the US not really, you know, in my opinion, not really embracing AR hardware, smart glass technology, you know, I think that we took a major leap, you know, backwards, a step backwards. We're at the cell phone that sits in your briefcase stage that feels like when I thought we were going to be at the Motorola flip phone stage, right? Or we're almost to that technology. So there's a long way to go. I think there's a long way to go, and the lack of money in this industry and in investment in this industry has done a disservice to where we could be right now, in my humble opinion.
So I'm just going to restate a little bit, because you said some very interesting things in there. On the one hand, ODG was really far ahead with what they had accomplished already. And given what they had done and the amount of time that they were doing it, you imagine that we'd be further along at this point.
Yeah, 100%.
But they stumbled and are out of the game. Mm-hmm. And some other company raised $3 billion and sucked up a lot of money, energy, mm-hmm. expectation out of the market, and totally didn't deliver. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we're not even yet to the Razr, the Motorola Razr, which was an amazing device back in the day when it first came out.
Yes, dude. Yeah. If you didn't have a Razr, like, come on, man. Yeah.
The first super successful flip phone back in the day.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so the recognition is really that it's slow going and it's going to be a slow ride from here.
Absolutely.
Continue to be a slow ride.
Yeah. And that's what it feels like. You know, we're plugging a cell phone into a pair of smart glasses, and now you've got this amazing experience. And, you know, and I'll tell you, you know, investors find zero value in that. You know, it's amazing to me. You know, and some of the, you know, won't go too into detail, but some of the stuff that you and I talked about, not on the podcast, what you're doing. I mean, why aren't people driving bags of money to you? Like, I don't understand. It's frustrating to me. Your success, our success, everybody's success validates this industry. You know, the more investors, the more people that see what we're doing and believe in what we're doing drives the innovation further, faster, more, you know, it gets exciting quickly. I mean, I'm astounded on why that hasn't happened yet.
One contributing factor, I'll just throw out one thought on this, is that because these major tech companies, even those that weren't startups that raised billions of dollars, there are others out there who are spending billions mm-hmm. of dollars a year, and they know how to do hardware. They're experts in it. And so if they haven't delivered it yet, and if they can't figure it out, then why the heck would anybody else be able to pull it off?
Seriously, dude, one of these companies is buying glasses from us. Like, and you'll see, I don't know if they'll announce it or under NDA or whatever, but it's funny that little New Eyes, this major company that's a $1 billion company that's trying to build glasses is buying stuff from us. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, and we always have these philosophical conversations on our sales calls with the team. And, you know, why can't company A do this? Why can't company B do this? They've got more money than anybody on the planet. And our thoughts are, and we could be completely wrong, is they're trying to do something that's so difficult right now. Like, I'm trying to do 10K displays. Okay, but there's no content that does that. I'm trying to do 8K displays. I'm trying to do all these things. Start simple. I mean, do you know somebody that started running before they were walking? Probably not. You know, start simple. Build your base. You know, you live in a house. You know, we built the walls before the foundation. I'm sure that's going to go well. You know, build something that's simple, get your feet wet, be in it. It may not be the best thing to date, but you're building that foundation to build the next best thing, where it is 8K displays, where you've got this great, you know, experience that's never been done before. But you can't go to Z if you haven't gotten to A.
In some ways, Google started small. Mm-hmm. And they have had this product now on the market for 8 years, 2013. Mm-hmm. They launched that Google Glass originally. And it was relatively simple.
Yeah.
But it's evolved very little in that time.
Yeah.
Do you think that's just a limitation on the technology? They just gave up on it, on the product? Why do you imagine that, given that they were a large company with lots of funding and could iterate continuously on the thing, there have been remarkably few actual iterations that we can see as outsiders in that product.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll go back to my infamous, I'll say infamous Navy days, right? You know, I was stationed aboard a frigate, and you saw how a frigate could turn versus an aircraft carrier. It's the slow-moving boat. There's, you know, 4,000 people on it, and it's just this gigantic entity versus a frigate, which is, you know, 250-plus feet, where I could bang U-turns. Like, it just it is what it is. So I think for that, using that analogy, I think that you're right. There was a lot of starting and stopping. But I think the slow going where, I mean, there's probably the smartest people on the planet that work for Google, right? Probably someone said down the line, why don't we do two displays instead of one? Why don't we increase the field of view? Why don't we do these common sense things to you and I? To maybe the upper management there where they said, you know what, this is just not going to worth it. It's not going to be monetizable. I don't know it. And there's some smart guy in the back of the room going, dude, just listen to me. I know what we can do. I think a lot of times when you're on an aircraft carrier, it's slow going, and you know, the smart people in the room just don't have control on where the direction's going to go. And I could be wrong. Who knows?
Let's wrap up with a few enlightening round questions.
Uh-oh.
What commonly held belief about spatial computing do you disagree with?
I disagree that it takes billions of dollars to make something relevant.
Insight and innovation do not necessarily equate to gigantic budgets. You don't need one in order to get the other.
Yeah.
Besides the one you're building, what tool or service do you wish existed in the AR market?
I wish, and this is terrible, I wish the iPhone, this is personal, I wish the iPhone had a Type-C plug.
Universal connector.
Yes, a universal connector. That has been one of the hardest challenges for us to solve personally, and again, it's personal, right? That we have solved, we haven't announced it yet, but we have solved to connect, you know, the iPhone to smart glasses. What a pain in the ass.
As a consumer, they've done it on some of the versions of the iPad,
yeah,
but not the iPhone. I'd heard one excuse was, well, it's easier to make the current Lightning plug waterproof or water resistant.
I don't know about that. Maybe right, maybe not. But yeah. I think it's more of a proprietary thing than anything.
Yeah. What book have you read recently that you found to be deeply insightful or profound?
You know, so my military background, of course, you know, you're reading Tom Clancy and other things. A gentleman wrote a book, and I do forget what the darn thing was called. I met him personally. He wrote a book about being left in a jungle in Vietnam and the struggles that they went through, this Marine group that got left in the jungle by themselves, and what they went through and the struggles and how they overcome these challenges. And I think, you know, reading that book and then reading it multiple times really helps with the struggles of entrepreneurship, that things could be a lot worse.
Was it Jungle Rules?
No, the author, it's a smaller book. The author, his name's Bob Bursey, and he gave me the book personally, and it's definitely a good read. It's not one of those big bestsellers, obviously.
Yeah, very cool. If you could sit down and have coffee with your 25-year-old self, what advice would you share with 25-year-old Mark?
I would share a lot of advice, at least entrepreneur advice. As my wife, you know, tells me, I'm one of the worst business people on the planet. I think I would tell him, you know, trust but verify. you know, especially dealing in the world of investment where people say, oh yeah, we'll do it, it's great. You know, I think, you know, telling him that, you know, don't trust what people tell you. Let them show you what they're going to do. My parents, to their credit, maybe not, you know, raised me as, you know, treat people how you want to be treated and trust them before, but, you know, trust them until you can't trust them anymore. I think from an entrepreneurship and business standpoint, that's, you know, unfortunately sometimes not the best trait.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
From normal human interaction, it's desirable carry that level of trustiness. Creates better relationships. Yeah. More open, more accepting.
Yeah.
But in business,
it's almost the antithesis of, unfortunately.
Paper matters, action matters.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts you'd like to share?
No, I mean, I think, you know, I appreciate your time, appreciate you, you know, stooping down to the New Eyes level and talking with me. We're doing some great things that a lot of people don't know about, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me about, you know, what we're doing and what our thoughts are and how we're how we believe we're changing the world.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Where do people go to learn more about you and the work that you're doing at New Eyes?
So easy enough. So neweyes.com. So N-U-E-Y-E-S.com. It's not N-E-W. So N-U-E-Y-E-S.com. And follow us on social media. I've got some great, great stuff going on with the gaming glasses and people playing video games and all that fun stuff. So it's an exciting time here.
Awesome. Mark, thanks very much for this conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Before you go, I'm going to tell you about the next episode. In it, I speak with John Black and Mina Fahim, two of the co-founders of MetaView, a company working to simplify minimally invasive procedures, enhance clinical workflow, and improve patient outcomes using augmented reality. We talk about the unique challenges and opportunities for using AR during surgery, as well as the benefits and lessons learned from their partnership with the Cleveland Clinic. I think you'll really enjoy the conversation. Please follow or subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss this or other great episodes. Until next time.